Easy to explain, hard to put into practice then. Why? Well, first of all, because we don't usually notice the key moment. We're not aware enough. Secondly, because we're used to responding to feeling with emotions other than kindness. So we're not emotionally positive enough. And then thirdly, we don't understand the nature of things thoroughly enough. We're not clear enough. So we're not aware enough, kind enough, or clear enough. We're a bit aware, and we're a bit kind, and we're a bit clear. Right? But, you know, it's what I said at the beginning. In order to really kind of cultivate and take on these practices, we're going to have to be more aware, more kind, and more clear. So how could we improve on all of this? So not being aware enough. Well, in the context of being on retreat, doing the mindfulness of breathing practice helps a lot. And in terms of, you know, normal meditation practice at home, it's why we teach both those practices. You have both the mindfulness of breathing and the metta bhavana as two basic kind of practices. Then it improves our awareness, but it also helps with positive emotion. So another thing that helps, which is certainly happening this weekend for I'm sure for most of us, is just having less input from time to time, you know, less moving away from a busy life to a situation where there's a lot less input, can calm things down a bit in our mind and our body, and maybe we'll just notice things more, a bit more subtly, things that we don't normally have the time to see. So giving ourselves more space helps become more aware. So does slowing down a bit. So does taking notice of ourself, rather than often being in situations where really we're being called upon to take notice of something outside ourselves, other people. Taking notice of our physical being, and taking notice, then letting that lead into taking notice of what we're feeling. Just notice it more. So second thing was being emotionally positive. So then especially developing metta and kindness for ourselves. All these Brahmavihara practices, as you'll find out, the first stage is always developing kindness for ourselves. So from that, other benefits arise. More confidence, it gives us more confidence to do that over a period of time. More emotional robustness. And I think maybe most importantly, metta for oneself provides resistance to older emotional patterns in us when they arise. If you remember, that's the being drunk. That's being under the sway of likes and dislikes. But we do, apart from the more kind of, well, in a way, obvious likes and dislikes that we might have, that some of them can be fairly easily dealt with, but others actually go a bit more deeper rooted than that. It's a bit more like there's whole currents of habit and pattern in us. And they are going to be challenged by doing these practices if they're patterns that have led us to respond with aversion towards a situation or towards people, or craving towards people or aversion. If that's there in us, then it's going to be challenged. Those sorts of deeper seated patterns, they're going to be challenged by doing these practices. And that's a good thing. We don't bring ourselves happiness by getting involved in aversion and craving. So that's quite an important consequence of practicing the Brahmaviharas. And the actual practice itself means that we do get more emotionally positive. But it might be useful at this point to just identify what some of these older emotional patterns might be. So pleasant feeling, in Buddha's teaching, pleasant feeling is said to have an underlying tendency to craving. It's kind of built in. It's kind of built in with it. There's always a tendency there if something's pleasant. We wish it to continue and repeat. It's natural. We just wish it to continue. It's pleasant. The trouble is so that then craving for it arises. So we get caught in something, we get caught in greed or a craving response, grasping after it then happens. Or resentment may arise if it stops. Or envy and jealousy may arise if it's somebody else's pleasant feeling that we would like. Their good fortune that we would like. So there's craving, resentment, envy and jealousy, and a bit more subtly, there can be a kind of vicarious enjoyment and satisfaction that can come in. And that's a bit harder to see. It can sometimes disguise itself as sympathetic joy, but it kind of isn't. It's a bit more parasitical than that. Not a very pleasant experience, really. But a bit harder to see. But certainly in response to pleasant feeling, especially with other people, there can be this vicarious satisfaction that arises. But it's me-centred. It's not really gladness for them. It's something that I gain in a kind of funny, convoluted way. So then there's unpleasant feeling, which in Buddhist teaching has an underlying tendency to aversion. So that's clear enough. So if something's unpleasant, we don't want it. We just want it to stop. We don't want it to continue, and we don't want it to repeat. Other things arise in dependence upon unpleasant feeling. It's because, of course, you'll have noticed that in dependence upon unpleasant feeling, it's not always that compassion arises. Right? We know that ourselves. Sometimes in dependence upon suffering, our experience of suffering, our own and someone else's, it's not compassion, it's something like horrified anxiety that can arise. Or even a sense of helplessness or hopelessness in response to suffering. All sorts of things arise. It's certainly not compassion all the time. And then if we're trying to reflect on both suffering and joy, it's more difficult to say if that has an underlying tendency. Perhaps if it does, it's connected with delusion, with deludedness, not seeing things clearly enough, not understanding clearly enough that suffering and joy are both impermanent. So in dependence upon that, the kind of things that arise is a sort of indifference, rather than concern. It's a kind of indifferent approach. Well, you might have a perspective, but it's a bit of a remote, cold perspective on things, leading to indifference. And the other thing that can happen is emotional turbulence, rather than a calm, a calm mind with permeated with equanimity. Actually, what can happen is a lot of emotional turbulence. So, metta for ourselves helps anchor us and avoid some of those old emotional responses of ours. So no doubt you can all recognise at least some of the examples from the list that I've given. It's my own list. but I expect you can recognise some of it. So, for example, I'm quite good at indifference, whilst at the same time taking great pride in my depth of perspective on things and even people. But I can fall into an indifferent, I lose my concern. I fall into a bit of a kind of remote, indifferent emotional response to it. What I need to do is reconnect with metta for the whoever it is or the situation. So all these are explorations of how to begin and what to do with these practices. But we can't wait until all these old patterns disappear before starting to practice Brahma-Viharas. And there's no need for that. We'd probably never start. But anyway, the actual practices themselves provide help with eradicating the patterns. But it's good to have that kind of overview of the process, and the kinds of processes that we're going to need to engage in. But very specifically, it's not just that in general the Brahma-Viharas help with these tendencies. Actually, they can help very, very specifically. So, for example, if anxiety arises when contemplating suffering, then what we can do is reflect that everything is not always painful, that joy also exists. And that does help with a response of anxiety to suffering. Just that we can just recall, well, all right, but it doesn't go on forever. And other joy and happiness also arise. That helps. if vicarious satisfaction, you know, the kind of parasitical kind of thing, arises when contemplating joy of someone else's joy, then to avoid that getting a real grip on us, then we can reflect that joy is subject to ending, and then that helps break a kind of tendency to get intoxicated with joy. And if indifference arises when contemplating suffering and joy, then, as I said, with that one, you reconnect just by feeling metta again, by bringing that more to the fore in it. Okay, so that was all about how to become more emotionally positive. So that leaves the third thing I mentioned, which is how do we understand things more thoroughly and become clearer about how things are from a Buddhist point of view. So one answer here is just to get on and practice the Brahmaviharas, and as you circle around that set, that mandala of meditations, it unfolds. It unfolds under its own steam, as it were. A bit of help from us is needed, but it does start to unfold, and even the beginnings of experiencing some of those four great emotions itself brings greater understanding. So one answer to how to increase our understanding is just do it, just engage with, just have some faith in the practices and engage with them. So you might wonder, you know, how that happens. Well, I think partly it happens just by the practices themselves eradicate at least some of our underlying tendency to craving and ill will and even delusion. And when those get weakened and then replaced with kindness and compassion, actually that does mean we're going to be able to look things in the face more than we might. You know, look things in the face, look impermanence in the face, not recoil from it, not avoid what we're seeing. So in a way, actually just doing the practices strengthens us emotionally. It makes us more emotionally robust. And the Brahmaviharas themselves, they are the appropriate response to how things are. So the more we develop them, the more they safeguard and strengthen us.